This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech, episode 540, recorded on March 13th, 2018. As most of you know, a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And we try and put together some interesting topics for you that will hopefully enrich your ministry, whether it be professional or personal. And helping me dialogue our way through those intersections is Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, I hear you got people running through your house left and right wanting to give you lots of money for it.
I wish that were true. We did put it on the market, so it's official that we are selling our home, and that is a whole lot of work. I'm glad that we finally got it to a point where we could show it and hope that it stays clean. Wish me luck.
That's the thing, yes. Please end this soon. And then your set will change. We won't see that familiar banana-eating monkey behind you. I assume that's a cookie jar.
Yeah, it's a treasure house find. And you just may be surprised. He might make it into the RV as well. He's very near and dear to my heart. So
you have to glue those things down, don't you? You can't just let them rattle around.
Well, we aren't planning to be, moving every day or anything like that. We hope to stay in one spot for a while and enjoy all the things that different areas of the country have to offer and worship in a lot of different places in the process.
Nice. So yeah, that sounds like awesome fun to me.
Yeah.
So how many states haven't you been to? Have you done that tally?
You know, I probably have in the past, and I've probably been to maybe 20 or so. I've done a good bit of traveling in the United States, but not like you, I bet. How many have you been through?
You've got a lot to go. I think I have two to go.
But that's awesome. Yeah, I got a long way to go. I haven't been out west hardly at all, at least not beyond Colorado and that kind of thing. So
hard to drive to Hawaii.
Yeah, that one gets special dispensation, and we will be visiting Hawaii at some point. That's the goal, at least.
Good for you. All right, well, we've got a show to do. We're mid-March, which means we're monthly theme or topic. And we've labeled the month of March Back to the Basics. And we had some fun last week talking about email. And we're going to have more fun this week talking about document management. So that's kind of the blocking and tackling of, you know, knowledge workers. You create documents, you edit documents, you collaborate on documents. If you're a teacher, that is a very important part of the teaching process, the assessment process, the learning process. So we figured that just you and I probably don't, and this is usually the case, don't have enough knowledge to plumb the depths of document management, regardless of how basic it is. So we brought in an expert. We had a chance the other day to interview Drew Willems, who is the director of technology at Lakeside Lutheran. I think he teaches a few classes as well. We've had Drew on the show before. He's always a great guest. And we interrupted his conference going activities. He is at Google. Is it Google Summit? Is
that the name correct. Of it? Yeah, Midwest Google Summit
out in the Dells. For those of you that don't live in Wisconsin, the Dells is kind of a resorty area with lots of resorts with water slides and water parks and those kinds of things. But Drew is hard at work, but he pulled himself away from some exciting sessions, at least one, to talk with us about his views on document management and what they're doing there at Lakeside Lutheran in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. So before we jump into our discussion, why don't we listen to our conversation with Drew Willems?
Joining us today on Wells Tech is Drew Willems, technology director at Lakeside Lutheran High School and conference attendee. Apparently we're horning in on some of your time at the Midwest Google Summit. Drew, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. You'll have to tell us how exciting your day has been, and also maybe give us a little bit of an idea about your normal day at Lakeside and other what your responsibilities are there and that kind of thing.
All right. Well, I'm currently at the Midwest Google Summit, which is put on by Google educators, Google facilitators, Google trainers. And we're up here in the Wisconsin Dells at Glacier Canyon Lodge. And it's 2 days of a fire hose full of information. There's various breakout sessions you can go to. Pick you what you want to learn about and do it. So I just was to a presentation where a lady from Richland Center talked about different ways to use Google Slides in your classroom. I did some geeky coding with Google Sheets and Forms earlier today. Cool. And as always, the food is outstanding.
Get down to the real important things. Huh?
This education focus, Andrew?
Yeah, so it's all about, it's a Midwest Google Summit. It's all about using Google products and Google add-ons, browser additions, just to use in the classroom. There's also a couple of sessions, especially for administrators, high school guidance counselors, to use a good workflow for Google, you know, how to store your files and where to put them and how you handle people moving into your school and out of your school, things like that.
Perfect. Well, we were talking about document management on our podcast today, so we thought you'd be a good person to turn to, and you're right there getting the up-to-the-minute information. You guys use G Suite, the Google tools there at Lakeside, correct?
Yes, it is the third year of Lakeside Lutheran using G Suite and the one-to-one Chromebooks. It's only my second year at Lakeside. So last year was trying to get up to speed with what they're doing and where they could go, how to help them be more efficient in their education with G Suite, and just there's so much to know and learn about Google that you got to start somewhere and make your way from there. So
let's start focusing, zeroing in a little bit on document management and maybe just on the faculty side, because they kind of wear two hats there. They have obviously the interactions with the students and the documents that flow through that process, but they also have other work to do where they're creating lesson plans and, you know, communicating with the outside world, so to speak. Any guidance that you provide for them? I'm sure that there are 101 different ways to do stuff. What kind of instruction or training tips, et cetera, do you give faculty for document management in general?
Basically, every summer when we have new teachers come in, we kind of run a little new teacher mentoring kind of session. Most teachers today are familiar with Google Docs and how to arrange things in Drive. But something we've just added this year, of course, Google recently released Team Drive.
Right.
So we're going to have to go through what Team Drive is for versus what Google Drive is for. We also have quite a few teachers that use Google Classroom. So that automatically puts a folder in Google Drive for each user. And we have to warn them, you know, don't mess around with stuff in there or you're going to lose your students' assignments and things. But part of what I do individually is try to get teachers comfortable how they want to organize Google Drive. If you've ever seen my desk at school, I don't organize Google Drive. I just put things in there because it is Google. It's the world's greatest search engine, and that's in Drive as well, which a lot of people forget about. You know, you type any word of any document and hit enter in the search bar, and you can find it. But some people like to be organized, so we go through nesting files, file folders inside of file folders inside of file folders. And then we also talk about how to upload things into Google Drive. For instance, I'll be teaching engineering courses next year, and there'll be files that I want in Google Drive from our engineering program. So it's not that I can edit them in Google Drive, but they'll be there wherever I go. So I can download them, use them on a laptop, and do some 3D drawing, and then save it on the laptop and upload it in Google Drive. And I'll take that copy with me wherever I go.
So you mentioned, I just wanted to go back, talk about Google Teams.
Turned off the lights on me.
Motions. I had that happen here too. You mentioned Google Teams or Drive Teams. How do you think that might change things for you? This is something that I think has been much needed for a long time. And I think teachers struggled with this concept that every document needs one owner, and now this changes a little bit, right?
Yeah, I compare it very much to having the first Microsoft server at Trinity St. Luke's School back in 1999. You had to train your users to stop saving stuff on their laptop, put it on the server. You know, whatever classroom you're in, you can get to it. There's a backup to it. So now, you know, 15 years later, we're saying, okay, don't save it to the server, put it on the team drive, but it's the same concept. Anybody can access it. It's automatically backed up. We can restore files as an administrator of the Google Suite. I can restore files if they're accidentally deleted. And everything is shared in Google. You want to collaborate as a faculty, now you're just sharing all of your documents and collaborating. So right now, we have a couple of team drives based on personal learning communities in the school and also different organizational groups in the school. And, you know, you just have to tell everybody, everybody shares it. And that's a good thing, because if I get hit by a truck someday, you don't lose all of my information. It's shared throughout everybody in Team Drives who has access to it.
Excellent. What about that administrative side? You alluded a couple of times to it. You've been to some sessions today about transferring students in and out, that kind of thing, keeping the flow of data, maybe teachers leaving to take a different call. When you put your things and share them in Drive, it seems like that would be pretty difficult to break all those connections and things and give them their data. Is that true?
It is. It is. There's a couple of different things that we do. First off, Google Vault came out a couple of years ago, and that allows each individual user to download a copy of all of their things in Drive, or they can switch it. They can switch ownership from a Lakeside email address to a personal email address. So that's been very helpful. There is some education you have to do with that. Usually after spring break, I got to send out a couple emails reminding the seniors, you know, they're going to lose their accounts. This is what you do. And then even in summer, some kid in July 5th will email me, oh, I can't get into my account. I have to refer them to the email and what we do for that. So that is a problem. Team Drives will eliminate that. If you have teachers that leave, now you could, as an administrator, make a team drive called the math department or eighth grade, and they could put everything in there, and then it's automatically shared ownership with other teachers. So that should eliminate a lot of troubles.
Let me ask you, Drew, this is maybe an aside. You've moved from grade school to high school. What's been the biggest difference for you other than the, you know, grade levels that you're teaching from a technology perspective and maybe even a Google perspective?
Ooh, that's a good, interesting question. I would think probably just the level of assignments that teachers are able to give and students can do, much more creativity, much more collaboration.
Okay, that makes sense, right?
Where students in high school kind of have their own ideas. So I personally make more open-ended assignments. Like today, I'm missing web page design class, and they need to make a form in their website, but I don't care what it's for. You know, is it for a family tree to gather information on relatives, or do you want to open a restaurant someday so you have a menu of items from your store that you put in a form? So there's a little more, I guess you'd call freedom that way in high school, whereas in the elementary school, there may be not so much of that.
Interesting. All right. Well, I'm sure that Lakeside has many things on the horizon. I was curious about technology at Lakeside and some of the exciting things you're doing there, G Suites or otherwise.
That's an interesting comment. Our faculty right now, between March, April, and May at the end of the year, we're going to study where we want to go as a faculty. What do we want to focus on educationally in classrooms? So do we want to get across more writing across the curriculum? Do we want to do more project-based learning? Do we want to collaborate more? Do we want to have a little more student-based learning where the teacher is the guide on the side instead of the sage on the stage? So we're discussing that right now, and then we can make a plan of what types of technology are going to help us accomplish that. Other than that, team drives will be rolled out to everybody. I've kind of unleashed it and launched it, but most other teachers aren't using it. And then a big piece is we're going to look at changing our office financial software. And then that will also determine how we're going to continue to make requests, how to make a budget, how to make a budget request. So there might be some more Google Forms or a different piece of software to use. So there's always something in the world of technology.
Things change.
There's no rest, and you just go from one project to the other.
So. I hear you.
Awesome. Well, we don't want to take any more time out of your Google Summit there, and we certainly don't want you to miss dinner. So,
no chance of that.
Drew, thank you for your time. Blessings on your time there and the rest of the school year. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you guys. It's been an honor to be asked to speak today, and you guys do an awesome job. So keep up the good work.
Thanks.
Thanks, Drew.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Drew, thanks so much for taking your time out of probably a very exciting couple of days, I would imagine. Sally, I've never been to a Google Summit, but that sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure there's all kinds of innovative educators out there sharing lots of great ideas. You know, you give them a tool like the G Suite to use in the classroom. You engage the students with Chromebooks of their own to work on their projects and things, and lots of good things come out of that. And just having a chance to learn from others, I'm sure, is a blessing.
Yep. And there's been a lot of change, too. When we first started talking about Google Apps, as it was called back then, or just Google Docs, before it was even a suite of tools, it's pretty rudimentary, pretty basic, and probably not real recognizable from what it is today. And now they've added, as Drew mentioned, Drive Teams or Team Drive. So that's a big win, I think, for a lot of people who felt that that was a glaring omission. We talked recently about the file stream, so a different way to sync your documents. I think that has made a difference, simplified things. Just kind of a good suite of tools that for most people, I would think, would cover your document management needs. And we would probably be a little bit remiss if we didn't say that Google Drive can house more than just Google Docs or Google Slides or Sheets, those kinds of things. It can actually house other documents, your images, your PDFs, even your Office Suite documents, your Excel documents and your Word documents and PowerPoints, those kinds of things. So very multi-purpose, a great tool at a great price. And I think it's Fairly easy. You probably have a little bit more experience than I, but fairly easy to teach and to learn just by jumping in. It's not an overwhelming thing.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that it has so many branches to it with a whole suite of tools that Google mm-hmm. offers and integration more and more with your Gmail, with your calendar, you know, just lots of crossover that makes managing documents in a business type situation, a yep. church or school in particular, just a lot more convenient. If everybody's in the same space, then you're going to have a better experience, I believe.
Yeah. Plus the mobile friendliness of it, the responsive nature of most of the tools. There. But Google is not the only player in town when you're talking about document management. There are other ways to go, and some of these are just as valid. Many people are familiar with Dropbox as a way to manage documents, share documents, collaborate on documents, and they haven't stood still either. They've got a great and very extremely reliable solution, especially if you're mostly dealing with documents. It doesn't have a lot of the other stuff that maybe Google brings to the table, but if your primary need is document management, they have a great syncing tool, very reliable, and very easy to use once it's in place. You simply are working with a folder or a set of folders, and you throw stuff in there, and it syncs to whatever device you have and whoever else is subscribing to it. So that's a bona fide solution. OneDrive is in that same category. That's what we use extensively here with our infrastructure, which goes along with Office 365, which is very reasonable for nonprofits as well. So you get the Office suite plus the online storage, really almost unlimited storage. So it's a pretty good deal and very reliable as well. And then finally, there's local file servers that have been around for a long time. I know a lot of churches and schools that still do that. And there are tricks and techniques to layer on top of that the ability to collaborate on some of those documents and get at them from the outside world too. And a long time ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, I even brought up an open source tool, maybe it was a pick of the week, called OwnCloud, owncloud.org, which allows you to kind of host your own Dropbox, your own syncing server. So you have the ability to kind of light that up and manage files via a web interface and sync files locally or collaborate on files with other people as you give them permission. So lots of different solutions out there.
I think maybe one thing you need to take into consideration is who your users are going to be. You know, mm-hmm. certainly with something like G Suite, especially with all their education ties now and Classroom and so on, you know, it fits very well in a school setting. But maybe you're just a standalone church. Your church doesn't have a school, and the majority of your work is between the pastor and his administrative assistant, if there is one, and then also with committee members, board members, that kind of thing. Maybe a solution like Dropbox is adequate for that kind of thing, and actually even preferred rather than going all out with a Google address or whatever to get access to G Suite. Maybe you just want to keep it simple and just set up one single folder for your boards to share their minutes in and things like that. I think it's going to, your mileage will vary depending on your setting for sure.
One thing that you really want to get out of the habit of doing, and Drew mentioned this even in the interview, is that, you know, the documents only exist on your hard drive or your desktop, that they're not someplace else, some kind of backup routine, of course. But, you know, the power of a lot of these systems is that they are reachable from different locations, different devices, and for different people from inside and outside your facility. So you want to kind of get into the habit of some kind of central storage mechanism. So avoiding, you know, attaching those documents to emails that get passed around. Put those documents out someplace where, you know, they're certainly secure, but then you can just send a link. And then if a document gets updated or needs to be revised, then everybody's always going to have the latest copy. It's not that you have to send another revision and then you have some kind of naming convention so everybody knows that they've got the latest document and so on and so forth. That's really the power of some of these solutions.
Yeah, and definitely comes along for a ride that things are backed up by Google or Microsoft, typically Dropbox as well. Any of those cloud-based services, they're going to have a reliable infrastructure to support your needs and to allow you to be able to get back your documents if things accidentally get out of whack or whatever it may be. And you're relieving yourself of some duties. I'm guessing most of our listeners have a few duties in their backpack that they struggle to keep on top of every day. So why not allow them to keep up with your storage and things and then not have to nurse along that local server and keep the patches on it and the updates happening for it? You know,
exactly. So a couple things to think about, and we won't spend a lot of time talking about use cases because there are, you know, most people can think of reasons why document management is really central to a project or work that they do. But just thinking in the schools area, curriculum studies, any kind of accreditation process. In fact, that's really central to what we're doing right now with WELSA is there's a centralized Google Docs infrastructure that needs to be used. Meeting notes, committees, faculty meetings, those kinds of things, project work, all those things are useful or kind of ripe for some kind of centralized document management solution.
Yep. Just a few tips beyond what Drew shared with us to make mention of. I think one of the key things is to establish a standard and to do your best to communicate that. And that doesn't mean just one time, but regularly to users within your realm so that everybody's doing things in a consistent fashion. If you go the Team Drives way, you know, make sure everybody knows how to properly use Team Drives and that it's different than the way it used to be when only one person owned a file, where it's, you know, shared ownership and things. Just having those consistent standards to use across the whole organization is really key.
Yep. Another thing to think about, at least as a consideration, is the portability of those documents. So not all these solutions will last forever. So you want to make sure that what you're doing is not lost, you know, next year or the year after. So you want to think about that. And usually with a lot of these solutions, there's a way to get your stuff out if you're putting it in. So you want to make sure that you're thinking about that. Know what your requirement, what requirements you might need for document retention. Some, in fact, that's probably an afterthought for most of us, but there should be some kind of rules and regs around how long you keep certain kinds of documents, contracts, for instance, policies, those kinds of things. So you want some kind of rules for those kinds of things as relates to legal matters, those kinds of things. So there's lots of documents out there. I think we probably even have some on the wiki about document retention too.
Yeah. And then making sure your training and documentation is in place. I'll mention it again. I think I've said that already, but you get new people on your staff regularly, right about the time that one person who was really difficult to train finally gets it. They usually take a call and leave and you have to start over with someone new on your faculty or staff. And so having good documentation in place and keeping it up to date, you know, or references to where documentation is in place for the particular tools that you're using are just really important.
Okay. And then in our prep, Sally, we came up with a few questions maybe that each organization should ask themselves as they're considering these solutions or maybe reconsidering what they're doing, especially in a school scenario. Do teachers and students need to be using the same tools and services? Sometimes that's not possible. So if you wanted to be kind of a Chromebook school and everybody in Google Docs, the outside world, you know, the business world, for instance, doesn't isn't always on that same wagon. So you need to maybe be able to support different solutions. Maybe the office staff is using Office, the Office suite, for instance, and they can't get by with Google Docs and slides and so forth. So you have to think about that as well. So there's the difference maybe between the office staff and the school staff and the church staff. So as you're thinking about these all, you know, if you want to set a standard, just understand that you do have different users that you have to account for and different use cases.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking standards and types of, in terms of file types as well. Like if we're going to share it outside of the building, it's going to be saved in a PDF format rather than in the, you know, the real format, the document or Excel spreadsheet or whatever it may be. You share in PDF only. So those are typical standards that you might want to consider. Also, syncing to the local hard drive. I think you mentioned, Martin, that some of these tools will allow you to have a sync folder. So you don't have to go to Google Drive or Dropbox or whatever it may be. You just work locally in a folder, which seems like you're just working like normal on your own computer, but then that folder automatically syncs to the cloud-based storage and vice versa. Now, maybe you want to do that, but perhaps you want to limit what they can sync so that their local hard drive isn't taken up with gigs and gigs and gigs of storage that they don't necessarily need. Just kind of some questions to consider.
Or another consideration there is privacy. So if you have sensitive data, you maybe not want to, you know, keep that or allow that to be synced, you know, all over, you know, for many different users. You maybe want to tighten that down or maybe even not allow it to be stored locally or on mobile devices, those kinds of things, or maybe even in the cloud. So you kind of have to think through those different scenarios for security reasons. And COPPA, you know, has some strict regulations about, you know, information sharing about student data, for instance.
Mm-hmm. One biggie question that we really haven't touched on at all with anybody is cost. And many of these tools are available for free or free for nonprofits or at a very discounted rate for nonprofits. But it is something you may need to budget for and plan for growth over time if you're going to, you know, exceed capacity levels or whatever at certain cost thresholds. So definitely consideration depending on your organization.
So that's probably enough chit chat about document management. It is a bread and butter, you know, of technology at this point. You really are living with documents day in and day out. So it makes sense to think about it, be smart about it. And there's always new solutions coming on the scene, but, you know, be smart, you know, set a strategy. And I think you've said it a couple times. Training and documentation are really important for a successful implementation. If you just throw a solution out there and say, everybody dive in, you're going to have varying results. Some are going to latch on, some are going to struggle with it. At the very least, you're going to have a lot of inconsistencies about how people use it. So you want to spend some time thinking through this. And as summer approaches and you're rethinking about a document management solution, that's a great time to think through that.
Definitely. All right. Time to move on. We should talk a little bit about Wells Now.
Yep.
And happening in the Wells space is an upcoming conference that Martin and I are particularly excited about and involved in planning. Not happening till next summer, but we're looking forward to Wells Education, Technology, and Leadership Summit, which is scheduled for June 25th through 27th, 2019. This is the successor to our Wells Tech Conference 2015, Martin, and it's going to be even bigger and better because we've teamed up with our friends in the school's office, and we're adding a leadership component as well. So lots of goodness to be happening during the EdTech Lead Summit in 2019. But it's only going to be as good as our presenters that we're able to provide for those that attend. And I think the people listening to this podcast are a great pool of candidates for our presenters. So we encourage you to consider presenting at Wells EdTech Lead 19. We have the call for presenters available out there on the website. We'll include a link in the show notes. You can get to it at wellsedtechlead.com. And we are looking for people that will present in any area related to education and technology and leadership. We have some great example ideas out there for you. We're only asking for 50-minute presentations, and there's some bonuses if you are selected as a presenter. So put on your thinking caps, folks, and share your good ideas of what you might be interested in presenting at the Wells EdTech Lead Summit.
And where do they go again, Sally, for information on that?
Yeah, the website is wellsedtechlead.com, and there's a link right there on the homepage to the call for presenters page.
open until I want to say May something, right?
Yeah, great question. May 31st. So you have a couple of months to consider and pull together your description of your session that you might offer.
Yeah, and you don't have to have the whole presentation ready to be shared, but certainly a good idea of what it might be. And if you're thinking that you may want to present and maybe a rough idea of a topic and you'd like to throw it our way for reaction, we'd be happy to do that as well and help you kind of craft something that would be really appealing to those attendees. And remember, we've got really three dimensions to this conference. So it's not just about technology, but also education and leadership as well. So if you have maybe something in your head that you want to share in any of those areas, please go to that website and submit it. It doesn't cost you anything to submit it. And the benefits are good. So
yeah,
we wish you would.
I remember when we wrapped up Wells Tech Conference 2015, just sitting in awe of all the exciting things that have been part of that conference. And I just am really anticipating a great conference in 2019 as well.
Me too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we mentioned it, but it's at the Kalahari, speaking of water parks in Wisconsin Dells. So it's a family, it's going to be a family thing. So, all right. I think we can move on, Sally, to our picks of the week.
And my pick of the week comes from my friends at TechSmith. TechSmith is a software company headquartered in Michigan, actually, that creates two really great pieces of software that I'm a big fan of. The first is called Snagit, and it's for screen capturing, typically images, but you can also use it for little short video captures as well. The second is called Camtasia, and I would say TechSmith is one of the, a very short list of leaders.
Industry leader, I'd call
it. Industry leader, yes, of video editing software, and that's what Camtasia does well. So they have a lot of great blog posts, Martin, believe it or not, training folks on screen captures and video production. And one that I came across recently is titled How to Make Great Corporate Training Videos. And they boiled it down to just 5 steps, but I think they gave you enough detail. If you're new at video conceptualizing and also production, you're going to really benefit from skimming this article. And, you know, I know we aren't dealing with listeners who are in corporations. The title corporate might set you off a little bit, but I do think we are dealing with our Wells Tech community that wants to communicate a great message in the best ways possible. And video is definitely the communication tool of choice for many these days. And so taking a look at this article where they break it down, like I said, into 5 steps is probably a good start for you if you're looking to get into video production. Step 1, pick your topic. And they give you some ideas about narrowing down and zeroing in on a topic. Step 2, choose a format for your content. And this was helpful because it's not just, oh, I'm going to make a video. Maybe I'm going to make a screencast and show myself interacting with some software or a website. Maybe I'm going to make what they're calling a micro video, 5 to 15 seconds long, and, you know, zeroing in on a very specific message that I want to send in that short period of time. Another option would be a presenter video for like live training, a demo video where you're demonstrating something, a role play, an animation, or an interactive video. Kind of like a choose your own adventure type video where people can respond to situations they see and go different directions. All of those are possible with Camtasia software. So gives you some good ideas for ways to be creative with your video. Step 3 is really key for me, and one that I find either kind of makes or breaks the quality of the videos that I've done personally, and that is to script and storyboard the video where you're actually planning for and kind of visually mapping out what you're going to demonstrate or show in the video clips. And they give you some links to different paper storyboarding tools and things, and just a really great section to read up on there. Then step four, recording and editing. And they talk about different ways that Camtasia can help you with the editing, like drawing out things or having text overlays on things. And then finally, producing and hosting and distributing the video is step five. And they give you some great ways and capabilities of Camtasia to do that. So it's not a real long read, but I think it's a real great read for people that are just beginning to think through video production and all the steps involved. So check it out.
Very nice. Thanks, Sally. Mm-hmm. Big fan. I was just using Snagit this morning for some different things. So yeah, they just continue to up the ante, I think, for all their products. Good stuff. All right. I am going to share with the class something that just kind of popped into my head the other day, so I decided to write a quick blog post about it. And that was a tool that I've kind of adopted for my prayer lists. And that's prayer in general, it can be a challenging thing, the discipline of it, finding the time to do it, remembering what to pray about. And to me, one thing that has been really helpful is, bringing technology into the equation. And that is by creating a prayer list through a digital tool. And there's obviously a lot of different ways to do that. But one thing that I do in the morning to try and get prayer into my life on a regular basis is to pray in the car. So I have a 30-minute commute every day. And part of my commute, I start off with listening through the daily devotion and through my Bible series in our Wells mobile app. And then I follow that up with prayer time, which is great. There's quiet time. I know the way to work, so I don't have to think too much about, what turns to take. Actually, a very straight shot. I'm on one road almost the whole time. So I have some nice time for prayer, but one thing that I kind of missed was having my prayer list available. So I decided, well, can I get this on my phone that wouldn't endanger, my route or take my hands really off the wheel, but I could bring up pretty quickly either through, Siri or Google Assistant that could just pop up and open for me. And I looked at a number of different products, and I'm kind of waffling right now even between two, but the one that I'm using right now is Trello, which we've talked about in the past. We use it for our project management all the time here at the Senate office. But it's good at a lot of different things, and one of those is checklists, and prayer lists are really checklists. And so in my blog post, I talk about some of the requirements that I was looking for. I wanted it to be cross-platform. I needed to be able to get at it wherever I was, whether I was on a desktop computer, laptop, or mobile phone. I needed it to be easy to get at and to change and check things off. And so I found that Trello met all those, checked all those boxes, so to speak. The experience has been actually very good, and I have a couple of different categories for my prayer list. I have weekly, so those are kind of the ones that I just cycle through. And I find that, praying on a particular item rather than every item every day is, go a little bit deeper has been beneficial to me. And then I have a list called special, which is kind of those prayer requests that come through. With those two lists in hand, I have plenty of ammunition, so to speak, for my prayer ride. And it's been a very positive experience. If you're not into Trello and want maybe to consider other digital tools, OneNote is one that the other one that I waffle back and forth with. I think that's an excellent tool, cross-platform. Evernote's out there still. Google Keep, because that's available multiple platforms. So that was important to me along the way as well, that I've got those options as I try and figure out how best to keep things up to date. So that, and we'll put a link to my blog post in the show notes as well.
Well, thanks for taking the time to document that process and share your experience with it, Martin. I think that's something kind of personal that, maybe some people struggle with. I know in ancient Wells Tech days, we talked about prayer apps and there's lots of different directions. You can just have a notebook and write things down, or maybe you don't do any of those things. And maybe this is an encouragement for you to get a little bit more
Some kind of routine is really routine. What the key was for me, you know, to, and we talked about when we were reviewing the book, What's Best Next, that was a whole chapter, the importance mm-hmm. of some kind of routine, that if you don't make it a part of your regular schedule, then it kind of can drift off and you can get sidetracked a little bit. So that's mm-hmm. that's kind of what it does for me. It's just kind of a reminder. It's right there in my app, so it's hard to miss as well. So that makes it more a part of my day, or more likely for me to gravitate toward it. So
good.
All right. Let's talk about ministry resources, Sally, and you found some great ones for the season or the seasons coming up.
That's right. This is a time of year where we're anticipating Easter, and right behind that, confirmations, graduations, springtime, lots of different things happening on the calendar and on the church year calendar as well. And I thought it might be a good time to remind people about our Wells Tech Photo Challenge album. It was already a few years ago now, Martin, that one of our Wells Tech emphases was to gather photos for a public domain image library, basically, that people specifically geared toward church and school usage, that covered topics that were relevant to the church and school, but made these images available for a free price tag, as well as for royalty-free use or public domain use. And there were several categories that I thought were worth reminding folks about today in the library of images, because there's some really great ones out there that you might want to use in your various forms of communication in the upcoming seasons. Starting with Easter, beautiful pictures of the church at Easter, as well as Easter lilies, Easter eggs, pictures for Maundy Thursday specifically of bread and wine and communion, pictures for Palm Sunday with palms, Good Friday pictures of photos of like the crown of thorns and that kind of thing. Just some really great images for you to make use of in the Easter season. Moving from Easter on into confirmation, there's actually pictures of like a young girl kneeling at the railing with someone blessing her. Just pictures of red flowers. We often use red flowers along with confirmation. So pretty flowers on the altar, pictures of crosses, things like that, that might be appropriate for the confirmation season. Then there's pictures of graduation, like a high school graduation, and some are kind of generic and others are more close-ups of people and things like that. Students tossing their caps after graduation, that kind of thing. So a variety of pictures for graduation. And then finally, just springtime, beautiful pictures of flowers and spring happening. I know it's going to happen at some point. Right now, we're just watching the snow piles kind of slowly sink into the ground. They're retracting, but not very much. Not enough for springtime pictures yet, but they're out there in the Wells Tech Photo Challenge album anyway, and you can take advantage of those and, like I said, make use of them in your church and school communication.
Yep, royalty free. They're awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to community feedback.
And we have a good bit of community feedback today.
Awesome.
I'll kick it off with a tweet that someone asked, and it was Tim R., and I don't know, you know, exactly who that is, but Tim, I guess right off the bat, we owe you an apology because you tweeted us back on February 23rd and I missed it. It fell through the cracks. And but you asked, do you have any recommendations for door access control systems or vendors? You're currently exploring Access A1001 with Synology to integrate surveillance. And I know there are plenty of schools, especially out there, that have some door access systems in place, but I personally don't have knowledge of recommendations along those lines. Martin, are you able to share any information with Tim?
I think the best advice I can give is an email out to our Wells Tech Google group, for one, because there are, I know for a fact, a lot of our high school tech directors, like Drew Willems, who definitely are in charge of those kinds of things and could recommend either a local vendor or a generic system that might be helpful for you. I don't know that we have one that I'd point to in our ShopWells system. I can't say that with 100% accuracy, but I think your best bet is to kind of just put a note out there to our Wells Tech Google group.
And Tim, you can visit our show notes, and we always have links to the Wells Tech Google group available for you. So if you aren't signed up for that, then join the group and put the question out there. Very helpful group. They're usually quick to respond. Next up, another question about equipment, this time from Pastor Jason Strong. He was looking to make a video camera purchase. He says, we're going to purchase a video camera for worship, both to record worship and also stream it to a TV in our nursery area. Do you have any recommendations for cameras or companies that we could contact to help us in our search?
And that we do have some contacts within our Shop Wells program. So Dave Osbach is somebody that we've actually used at our church, and he was involved with the MLC Chapel build out as well. I don't think he is a reseller of video equipment, but he definitely kind of acts as a contractor or a consultant and can point you in the right direction. He is with DSH Audio Visions. And if you go to our shopwells.net page, there it's an easy find to look them up, DSH Audio Visions. I think they're, I don't know where they're located. I want to say Green Bay or someplace up there, but I could be wrong about that too. But he's a great guy and would certainly point you in the right direction. Just as a generic recommendation, most of the cameras that we've used for live streaming from a Cine perspective have been Sony pan tilt zoom cameras, and we've been really happy with their performance and durability. So that's just a general recommendation. They're not the cheapest, but I think they're probably the best overall, maybe the best value long term. So best good resale value if you decide to go with something else as well.
Excellent. Moving right along, we had suggestions for show topics, which is really helpful to us. We heard from Michael.
I'm going to give it my best shot. Vieger?
There you go.
Yep. I don't know if the L is pronounced or not, Michael. So,
but Michael wrote to us. Anyway. Yeah, longtime listener, and he had two different show suggestions, and we definitely will put these things on our radar, Michael. First, he talked about backups. He's a tech director in charge of backing up important files, and he tries to follow the 3-2-1, three backups, two different types of media, and one offsite, but he hasn't found great, easy ways to do those last two steps. So he gave us some ideas and links to different videos and things of solutions that different people are doing. So look for a show coming up in the future about backups. We will revisit that topic. It's been quite a while.
He raised some things that I was not familiar with. So I'm excited to take a look at a couple of these. Some of these are free. That's always good. But these are interesting suggestions. So thanks, Michael, for those.
And then the second topic he suggested was alternative operating systems. He said, and I smiled at this, it's been a while since Wells Tech has discussed this topic. Episode 15, I think. Yeah, that's been a while. That would be 2008. So yeah, time to look at alternative operating systems again. And there are many out there in the Linux space, but he gives lots of good directions to look.
To get, who did we have on probably that show? Steve Daly, maybe?
Maybe so. Yeah.
He's our Linux pastor at large. So, all right. Very good. Yeah. Great advice. I think that we are probably overdue. Just talk about open source in general, because I think there's been a lot of advancements there that churches and schools could take advantage of. So thanks for the encouragement. Are we up to my little contribution to community feedback, Sally?
You're next. Yes, sir.
All right. I wanted to pass this along. We talked about email last week, and I had meant to dig a former post up that we had included, and I couldn't find it, so I just actually found another one that was just as good. But 15 tips for writing effective email. So we talked about the technology behind email and some of the protocols, those kinds of things, but we didn't really spend a lot of time talking about writing the emails themselves. So I found what I thought was a very good article about that. And they talk a little bit about assumptions, email psychology, those kinds of things. But then 15 tips for composing clear, concise, and responsive emails. And I'm not going to go through all of these, but determine your desired outcome. Pretty, you know, I actually makes a lot of sense, right? Quickly answer get to the point as quickly as you can. State benefits clearly. Remember to keep it simple. Pretend that it's a face-to-face intro. So as if you were talking with somebody. Text messaging tricks. Avoid excessive compliments. Be personal and personable. Make it easy to be found. Use simple English. Consider your fonts. Formatting matters. Minimize questions. Trimming words. Just all kinds of good, I think, blocking and tackling kinds of recommendations. One thing, and I'm sorry I couldn't find it, but one thing that really struck me about the article that I had in mind was the importance of putting what you want or the reason for your email in the first couple sentences so that somebody can know exactly what this email is about. One thing that kind of drives me a little bit crazy is, you know, just the FYI, you know, at the top, and then you have to read through this long thread at the bottom and you're not quite sure what the relevance is or what the person wants you to do with it. So if you're doing a forward, especially, kind of do a little quick summary of the conversation and why this is being forwarded to the person. And then if there are some specific requests around action items or whatever. And I've tried to really do that rather than just kind of blindly forward stuff and say, hey, take a look at this. This is what they're talking about. What do you think about this or that? Really helpful and a real time saver. And I appreciate it when somebody does that for me as well.
That is great to know. I'm happy to be in the Wells Tech audience today, folks, because I happen to send Mr. Spriggs a good bit of email. So I'm gonna
and you do a pretty good job. Yeah. Yes. This is right. There's no personal, you know, offense.
Yeah, read between the lines. I'm with you.
No, I wouldn't do that to you, would I?
Hey, we asked for community feedback last week on a kind of a sensitive topic to the Wells Tech co-host, and we got some community.
Which co-host are you talking about?
The co-host. No, I'm really confused. An S on there.
Okay. Oh, co-hosts. Okay.
Yes, it was the
video
topic.
Or audio, both, you know, that's a real question. And let me characterize it this way. I think most of the feedback that we got, I think a majority by a good shot actually, was keep the video. We, you know, at least those people that responded, of course, we use it. If not, you know, watching the whole show, going back and seeing things that were particularly maybe visual in nature. So I think that encouragement was there. There was at least one and some very good points made about, and I think we've heard this feedback before, that when we went to video, we kind of left some of our audio listeners, you know, at different points in the show a little bit out because we've forgotten that they're not all looking. So right, we have to kind of do a better job at figuring out how, when we're showing something or screen sharing, that we're actually talking through what actually we're showing so that the audio listener is not feeling, you know, on the sidelines and that they're missing something.
Yeah. And I think consistently across all the feedback we received, and we're still open to more feedback if you have opinions, but it was, you know, we listen. That's the primary thing that we do because it's kind of like a talk radio show, basically. But having the video there to reference can be a helpful thing. And I think one of the commenters brought out that I can't go try all this stuff on my own. And you guys trying it for me and showing me the highlights is a benefit. And I can quickly look at a section of your podcast and determine if it's going to be a helpful tool to me. So pluses on the video side for that, but that our audio is key.
Yep. Yep. And again, really appreciate the feedback. Mentioning feedback or talking about feedback, we would really encourage just general feedback on the show topics to be addressed or feedback on topics that we've talked about. So if you've got a let's say, a particular fondness toward a document management solution that you found helpful and maybe the reasons why. Love that kind of feedback, and I think our audience would as well. So contribute to the show if you would. There's obviously a lot of different ways to do that. We talk about it every show. If you just go to our show notes page, that's the place to start, wellstech.wells.net. And across the top, we have all kinds of social networking icons. You can send us an email. There's links to our Google Groups page. There's really no shortage of ways to get in touch with us. So if you have something to contribute, don't hesitate. Just spend 5 minutes and knock something out. It doesn't have to be professional. If you want to remain anonymous, we can honor that as well. So it's really important for us to get that feedback, both to know where we should head, but also to enrich the show as well. And this is one of my favorite segments of the show when we get to hear from different people.
Time to talk about our video of the week, Martin.
Go for it. And
I'm excited to share something I found really interesting. And I think maybe the educators would be interested, but also those that are interested in translation in general, which is one of the many areas that our Synod is involved in as we reach out with the good news to people that speak all different languages. This was a project that came up in a Google education email that I received. They have a cool video. It's only about 2 minutes long, about something called Story Weaver. And Google's gotten involved, put some money behind this and also some effort into Story Weaver. So you'll enjoy the video. It's a great little short overview. But what was particularly fun for me was to go check out the Story Weaver website at storyweaver.org.in. An effort that started out of India, but has grown globally. And basically, at its simplest level, people can come here and write a story. They actually provide a whole selection, like over 9,000 images, I think, that you can take and build into your story and write simple stories for children at all different reading levels. And they'll kind of evaluate what reading level the story is at and publish the story out on their website. What's cool about it is the stories are then available for people around the world to translate into other languages. And stories have been translated. It looks like there's over 7,000 stories out on the site already, and they've been translated into 106 different languages. Not every story in every language, but they're available. You can actually create an account and translate them into your own language just right here on the website. And so this one, for instance, Dino, My True Friend, was written by someone, it doesn't tell what country they're in, but they all have very foreign looking names to me. So I'm able to read it in English, but it's also available in a multitude of other languages on the website. And the illustrations are there, and just a really cool project with basically crowdsourcing children's books and the creation and translation of children's books. I thought it was a really neat project, and one that might help a teacher who has multilingual students in their classroom, or just something that might give us ideas of ways to present things in other languages as well. Thought it was worth a consideration.
So are these curated? I'm curious how stories get on there. As something, would we be able to put maybe a biblical story on there?
Yeah, and I did not dive that deep, but I believe you can come out and write your own stories. I don't know what kind of criteria they have for accepting them or not, but there are tools here right on the website to create your own stories.
Yeah. That's the first link there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After read.
So I had that same thought. Could we add stories to the collection that are biblical build that so into
like a class project
well.
Or whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Google thing was, like I said, they put money behind it. They also allowed their employees to dedicate time toward doing translations. So they have a global employee group, and they actually translated over 1,000 books into different languages as Google employees, just dedicating their time to this. So that was pretty cool too.
Yeah, cool. All right. So that is our video of the week. If you actually have suggestions for videos of the week too, we'd welcome those. We're always looking for content, I guess, is the net of our message here. Sally, we're going to continue our Back to the Basics series next week, and we're going to be talking about some more basics, calendaring and task management, actually two of my favorite topics as they relate to productivity. People would think those are pretty easy, pretty standard stuff, but there's lots of choices out there, and if you don't do it well, then you really haven't really schedule things up in order for you to get things done. So
yeah, they might also think that we've talked about it a little bit more frequently than episode 15, but the reason that we keep talking about it is it's changed. I guarantee you, since the last time we've talked about it, there have been changes in the realm of calendaring and task management. So tune in next week for the latest.
Yeah, very good. Sorry about the long show this week. We'll blame it on Drew, but actually it wasn't his fault. It was our fault. We're glad you stuck with us. Come back next week and for more Back to the Basics. Please continue to enjoy your Lenten journey and as we follow our Savior to the cross and look forward to the joyful day of Easter. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.